Yes, I guess that's what we're doing. We're calling doctors today. Northwestern Medicine is partnering with us today as we broadcast live with physicians from Northwestern to talk about COVID-19 and your health. And we have a oncologist is going to join us right now. We won't exclusively just be talking about COVID-19 because there are a lot of other health implications because of the COVID-19 pandemic and people's access to medicine through that and getting into hospitals and getting taken care of in the ways that they need to be taken care of. And Dr. Jyoti Patel is with us, Medical Director of Thoracic Oncology at Northwestern Medicine. And Doctor, thank you so much for being with us. Let's start with the issue that we have heard about over the last few weeks as hospitals have started to open back up. Actually around June 1st is when people started coming back into the hospital for regular treatment. People had missed a number of important treatments, and in the oncology department specifically, there was a lot of concern by your folks that people weren't coming in because they were afraid, right?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me bring up a couple of really great points. So certainly, I think, from much of the beginning of this year, we saw people avoiding coming to the hospital or delaying care because they were worried about the safety of the hospitals. And things that generally we want people to come and see us pretty quickly about are things like shortness of breath or coughing up blood or new pains that are unexplained. And often we found that perhaps with patients that were experiencing those symptoms, we're delaying over weeks and months to really get in and get evaluations.
On other things, then that really is such an important point, that people were just afraid to come in. It may have been nothing to do with COVID. They may not have had any of those symptoms, but other symptoms that can lead to, very serious diseases. So let's go back through that for a second, because you mentioned coughing up blood. You mentioned unexplained serious pains in areas. And there were people who were waiting months, you said?
Absolutely. We saw, I've met patients in the past weeks who sort of in retrospect think that they had symptoms probably for 4 or 5 months that they delayed seeking care of. And, there are a bunch of reasons for that. Often primary care offices were closed. People had to take public transportation to get to their doctors. Their family may not have been able to bring them. There are a lot of reasons for it. But I think a huge one was that people were just scared to think about what exposure might look like if they were waiting in a doctor's office.
Yeah, for sure. And we should talk about that because it is very different. I had to go in for a test right at the beginning of June, and I had the same trepidation, but my doctor's like, hey, listen, you're due for this. You got to do it. And so I went, and it was actually really well. The word I would use is trafficked. How the patient was moved through the system so that I had very little contact with anybody other than the people I needed to have contact with, whether it was the person performing the test or the person that was signing me in. But that's it. No other patients, no anything else. And I was amazed by that. Is that traffic pattern still pretty common at Northwestern right now?
It is pretty amazing how quickly we pivoted. So in the cancer clinics, we kept a pretty steady inflow of our patients. Perhaps we were at 80 to 85% of our normal volumes. But the appearance is so different. We don't have a lot of people in the waiting rooms. Our days are a little bit longer. We space patients out. We've split our teams physically. So perhaps like the medical assistant will be in a different hallway than the physician and the nurses. And so we're trying to also socially distance as we're working. The hospital, I think, before often could feel like almost like a terminal. There's so many people sort of walking through. Now we're up to almost 100% in terms of procedures and diagnostics, and everything looks empty simply because we have been able to put a lot of these traffic patterns and times and sort of staggered workflows in practice.
Now, as an oncologist, you're dealing with cancer patients. Cancer patients, by the very nature of the disease, obviously have greater and also more sophisticated concerns, because once they get into that diagnosis, they learn a lot about things. Is telemedicine still effective for those patients, or do they need to see you in person?
So telemedicine has been fantastic. We're able to do toxicity checks or to communicate with our patients really effectively on telemedicine. Many of my patients are getting infusional therapy or getting biopsies or CT scans that are in conjunction with my appointments with them. And so often we'll end up seeing patients personally. But if a patient has been stable, sometimes we'll even be able to do a televisit on their way to infusion. So I might not even see them. They may end up seeing just half of the team and getting the infusional therapy with immunotherapy or chemotherapy without coming into the main clinic area.
Doctor, do you get the sense that these new techniques and this new world of how patients are being seen, and especially in large research and educational hospitals like Northwestern, these changes are here to stay?
We have a lot to learn from this, and there have been some great silver linings in COVID, and I think one of those is telemedicine. We're shifting medicine such that patients interface with us when they need something, not in wellness, right? So there's a lot that we can do with telemedicine and new technologies. If there's a particular procedure or something that needs to happen, that we really can bring patients in for. And so it, I think, in many ways makes our reach a little wider. Patients and families aren't taking days off, a full day off from work to come in to see us. We're able to deliver a lot of the care that's needed remotely, and I think that's going to be here to stay. We've seen tremendous satisfaction. I think a lot of my patients have felt a lot of satisfaction about it when it's done well, and it's done in conjunction with sort of this team effort.
Do you feel safer?
I think joking with my friends early in the pandemic, when we didn't really know what was happening and we didn't understand as much about the virus, it felt like coming to the hospital was almost sort of walking into the lion's cave. I think by the end of March, we quickly understood that the hospital is a really safe place to be because we all comply. We all follow the same procedures and have the same understanding of how we operate.
Great point.
Right? So everyone washes their hands. Everyone wears a mask. Everyone stays away from work if there's any symptoms. We have these symptom trackers. But I think the hospital is actually a pretty safe place to be. And when we look at the healthcare worker transmission rates at our institution, they've been extraordinarily low because everyone has bought into this model.
All right. Doctor, hold on one second. Jyothi Patel is who we're talking to, medical director of thoracic oncology at Northwestern Medicine. Your phone call is coming up and your texts. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number and our text number. And we'll be back with Dr. Patel. But first, here's Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather.
There's Chicago in the Real. Watch Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten get real in the morning with the WGN TV morning news team weekdays 4 to 10.
Throughout the day, we're broadcasting live with physicians from Northwestern Medicine to talk about COVID-19 and your health. And Jyothi Patel is with us. She is, one of the greats, a thoracic oncology specialist at Northwestern. And Dr. Patel, there's a lot going on in the world of oncology that even in the middle of all of this, all we're talking about in terms of science and medicine is really about COVID. But there are some amazing breakthroughs just in 2020 on the oncology side that would be big news were it not for this overarching story, including the sort of speed trials and bringing to the market a number of different lung cancer treatments. Let's talk about that a little bit. What changes are there?
Sure. Thanks so much. It's been a really, really exciting time for patients with lung cancer. So just to remember, lung cancer is the most common cause of cancer death in the United States. We'll see over 200,000 people with lung cancer. And it affects the young and the old, never smokers as well as smokers, men and women, equally. We have made tremendous progress in the past decade and have multiple new treatments and screening technologies for our patients. On the treatment front, so for patients with advanced disease, which is how most patients, unfortunately, are still diagnosed, just in May, during COVID and shutdown, we had 7 new drugs approved, which is pretty remarkable, because when I started this 20 years ago, it would be one drug every 5 years. And this is a testament to the efforts we've put in building foundational science, in understanding cancer biology, and the willingness of patients to participate in clinical trials. Our science has gotten better, the trials have gotten smarter and quicker, and we're able to expand the reach of targeted therapies for our patients. So those are drugs that will target a specific molecular aberration in cancer, and often come with tremendous and deep and long responses for our patients, as well as really bringing immunotherapy to our patients. You know, these two sort of things that we've been chasing for a decade and a half of early science now have really transcended bench and come to bedside. So these are the drugs that we're offering to our patients when we first meet them.
So let's talk about immunotherapy. Explain that a little bit. There's a science to turning cancer on itself, right?
Absolutely. So all of us probably have aberrant coating of our cells, and those are cancer cells, but those tend to die. We have immune surveillance that keeps us healthy in most of life. Sometimes cancer cells can grow and co-opt the immune system and evade immune surveillance. So your normal immune system doesn't see these cancer cells as foreign. What's been exciting is that we now know some of those switches that we can trip to make your own immune system find the cancer cells again. There are a number of drugs that have been approved that are called immune checkpoint inhibitors. So the immune checkpoints are proteins that sort of silence the immune system. When we give these infusional drugs, so they're bivalent, they're antibodies that block these proteins, your own immune system can find the cancer and kill the cancer. And what's amazing about it is, again, that some of these responses are really deep. So we'll see, you know, multiple tumors sort of melt away, and we'll see long responses. So months and years longer than we'd ever anticipated. We still have a lot of work to do to figure out.
Dr. Patel, do the patients have to stay on that therapy for the rest of their lives?
So we're not sure. Most of the trials that have been done, the immunotherapies are given for 2 years, but we're looking at, can we give a shorter amount? During COVID, some exciting stuff happened in immunotherapies. One, we realized that we could give one of the drugs every 6 weeks. So you're just getting an infusion once every 6 weeks, you know, for over an hour or so. And that correlated with really nice control and good toxicity profile. So things are evolving. We know that sometimes even after we stop the immunotherapy because of side effects, or because the 2 years are up, we don't see evidence of disease in a small subset of patients.
I've got a question on the phone line, 312-981-7200 for you. Don, you're on WGN. Don, what is, I think I've just lost a doctor there. Jeff, can we get her back? But go ahead and ask me the question. We will re-ask her the question when we get her back. Go ahead.
Okay. Enjoy your show, by the way. Listen when I can. You're a little crazy, but so am I. Anyway, I'm 81 years old. I was just recently diagnosed with prostate cancer. Going to begin a treatment plan starting on Monday with a hormone shot, and I guess there'll be hormone therapy for several months, if not several years. I'm going to be doing radiation beginning September, middle of September. My question is, my oldest granddaughter is getting married mid-September. Love her to death. My wife and I are going to officiate the wedding. I'm a little concerned. It's outdoors, but I'm a little concerned. It'll be about 100 to 150 people. Am I taking on additional risk if I go ahead and do this?
Okay, so again, what is the treatment you're about to go under here?
Okay, there's two treatment protocols. One
for
is
prostate cancer.
Therapy, and I'll get my first injection on Monday, and then in mid-September, I will get a series of radiation treatments six weeks, once a day.
Okay, so, Dr. Patel, the question essentially is, here's an 81-year-old male, prostate cancer. He's starting these treatments, but his granddaughter is getting married, and he and his wife are going to officiate the wedding in September. Is it too risky for him to attend and to be able to do that?
Wow, so congratulations for your granddaughter. So, you know, I think our risk calculus changes a lot, and it really depends on, again, the precautions that people around you take. So, as I said before, like, I've been very comfortable coming to work because I know everyone that I'm with buys into the same calculus that I do, that we all wear masks around each other, that we stay away if we're not feeling well. We know that patients who are getting cancer therapies are often more vulnerable to viral infections, particularly if their blood counts are low from chemotherapy or if they've had radiation to their lungs or other places. They're more susceptible to having problems if they get an infection. You know, I think it really depends on, one, what kind of environment are you putting yourself in and what's everyone around you doing. You said the wedding is going to be outside. The sort of guidance is still in Chicago that we limit the size of groups that we're in. So I think some of those questions are tough and ones that you have to navigate. It sounds like a higher risk with a greater group of people, but I think there are probably ways to mitigate that.
Yeah. Does that make sense to you, Don?
Yeah, thank you very much. It's going to be outside, and it's going to be on a lake in Michigan. So, you know, we're not going to be around a lot of people who are going to be doing other things.
Right, but everybody should, especially around you, everybody should be obviously distanced and masked up, as we like to say around here.
Now,
Don,
exactly.
Don, good luck. Good luck with all of this, and congratulations to your family. And that sounds like a really amazing event. Patients who are undergoing chemotherapy, cancer patients undergoing chemotherapy, radiation therapy, whatever the treatments are they at higher risk for bad outcomes with COVID-19? That seems like an obvious question, but is there science?
So certainly the early studies that came from Europe, we felt that patients were at quite high risk, particularly those patients with lung cancer had a high mortality if they got COVID. Now we're seeing, I think, a sort of different severities. We are seeing some patients who have COVID and need to get back to cancer treatment. I would say that it's a wide spectrum. I think conversations that happen all the time are, if you have COVID, is your treatment delayed? Are there drugs that you are on that could heighten sort of your immune response? So we talked about immunotherapies. Those might make a COVID infection even more difficult if you're having side effects from the immunotherapies. And so I think the jury is out because patients get so many different treatments for their cancer, everything from stem cell transplants to oral drugs. But we think that your risk is certainly heightened, and it's definitely heightened if you're on drugs that diminish your immune system.
All right. One last call here very quickly. Becky, you're on WGN. Go ahead, doctor. Becky, to the doctor.
Dr. Becky. No, I just have a quick cancer-related question for the doctor. My mother passed away in December of multiple myeloma, which is a type of blood cancer, and I was just wondering if there's anything that I need to do as a 50-plus-year-old woman to make sure that I'm protected and that I don't possibly come down with the disease.
I'm so sorry to hear about your mother. I know that whenever anyone has a cancer experience in the family, we always talk about how do we mitigate risk and are there susceptibilities within families that may increase your risk of developing one of those cancers. Unfortunately, for most cancers, we don't have good sort of genetic risk factors. And so we say for diseases like myeloma, you know, do your normal, healthy lifestyle interventions, and also make sure you're doing your other cancer screenings. But there's nothing specific about myeloma that would put you at higher risk.
All right. Well, that's got to be relieving in some way. Thank you, Becky. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Doctor, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Dr. Jyothi Patel from Northwestern Medicine. She's an oncologist there. And again, throughout the day, we are talking to physicians from Northwestern, not just about COVID-19, but about your health, as you just heard right there. And we will continue that in the 5 o'clock hour. Tom Dart's going to join us, the sheriff of Cook County, coming up after the news, the bottom of the hour here. He had a good COVID-19 story this week. He got honored by a group that they were able to actually mitigate COVID-19 at the county jail. But is that going to change? We're going to put more people in. We're going to talk to the sheriff about that on the other side of the news. But first, here is the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here is Kim Gordon.